2 weeks. I am 6'3" and weighed 158 pounds the day I went in. The doctor drew blood and ran a bevy of other tests, and 2 days later he called me personally to explain I was carrying a crowd of unwanted guests in my belly, thanks to drinking unpurified water. You have a lot of Giardia, and C. diff, too. I'll phone in a script for you. Otherwise, he congratulated me on having the vitals of an athlete. 3 days later, things began to settle down in my gastrointestinal tract. I have since added backup water treatment to every gear list. The months immediately after the hike are the hardest. After seasons of sun and wind on my face, still air and artificial light felt wrong. I opened every door and window in the house, even though it was November. Snapping out of trances, I would find myself standing on the porch, staring at nothing, having no recollection of going outside. I kicked off the covers at night and pushed Katie away, thinking I was still in a shelter and that she was Lemmy, crowding my precious little personal space. In my dreams, I was asleep on the trail. Not beside it, but actually on it, nestled safely in the deep groove worn down by thousands of boot-clad feet. For me, the sleeplessness began my very first night home, but for a reason I never could have predicted. A relatively new and modern trail tradition, one only practical in recent years, is the selfie beard video. For as long as digital cameras have been around, hikers have been compiling picture-a-day beard animations, compressing 6 months of facial hair cultivation down to 5 captivating minutes of film. I had no plans to start on mine just yet, but one shot in particular caught my attention. I was glowering at the camera from arm's length, sweaty, disheveled, and clearly pissed off. It must have been the day of the Lone Raisin. For fun, I cropped the image and pasted it beside a shot I took from the plaque at Springer Mountain. My bare cheeks were round, I still wore glasses, and didn't have any burn marks or duct tape on any of my clothing. I added 2 more stills, before and after double biceps, in the hallway at home. I grouped the shots into a single image, and as a lark, posted it to Reddit, the self-proclaimed front page of the internet. I told Katie I was going to bed early and brushed my teeth. I rinsed, spat, and checked my messages one more time. There were 3, each regarding the picture. One was a congratulatory note, and the next 2 were strangers asking questions about hiking the trail. It wasn't too late, so I responded, happy to help, and by the time I was finished, there were 5 more. Then 12. Then 100. Within an hour, over 1,000 people had been exposed to a double whammy of me in my underpants, pudgy on the left, near death on the right. Dizzy and exhausted from 4 days in a car, not to mention 5 months in the woods, I collapsed into my bed, temporarily forgetting the brief burst of attention. When I awoke, nearly 3 million people had seen the picture. Every inbox I owned was flooded with questions and congratulations. Numerous clickbait websites had latched onto the image, and while I slept, the social media breakfast crowd scrutinized my shorts. This persisted for weeks, and to be honest, I didn't mind. It gave me the chance to talk about the trail and to share some stories. In a way, it was the ultimate group therapy. My 15 minutes were extended slightly when Mountain Express, an Asheville-based magazine, interviewed me. Very rarely, someone on the street or in an elevator would look at me sideways and say, "Hey, aren't you that guy?" It still happens, and I confess I don't mind. "The trail has a way of staying with you," the retired couple back in Virginia had warned me. I had no idea. A year later, Katie, Mark, and I revisited the AT and hiked together for a week near NOC, Land of the Noonday Sun. We were over 100 miles north of Springer Mountain when I encountered a Sobo nearing the end of his trek. While he and I talked, his face brightened as recognition dawned. He asked me if I was the underwear guy. I blushed. He had never even heard of the trail until seeing those pictures. Not a day goes by. While adjusting to the civilized world, I learned that Ninja Mike yellowblazed up to Katahdin, where he defeated the final boss in spectacular fashion. Lemmy is now back in Israel, studying art, and Voldemort has a job at a hospital, working with children. Ugh. I am incredibly fortunate to live in a part of the country renowned for its natural beauty. My post-hike rehabilitation over the course of countless hours has consisted mainly of writing this book on a tiny computer while sitting by a waterfall or huddled in my tent. A year after climbing Katahdin, my feet still hurt. If I walk barefoot on my hardwood floor for more than a few minutes, the invisible bunched-up socks come back. The doctor says the damage may be permanent, though if I'm lucky, the nerves might grow back over the span of years. Strangely enough, the one thing that brings fast, temporary relief for my feet is to use them. Hiking seems to work best. I eventually went back to work for a small software firm, similar to what I'd done before. The job allowed me to travel again and provided me with much-needed focus. Besides, standing on my porch appreciating the wind wasn't paying the bills. The work was the same as I'd remembered it, and I even teamed up with some old colleagues. But something was off. The lights hummed, the air never moved, the water coolers were haunted, and none of the ghosts were happy. I kept thinking about the man who died on the mountain. His ghost was mid-smile, about to say something. I started having the dream again, the one where I ran through cubicles, smashing plants and monitors with my trekking pole. It was cathartic, not quite a nightmare. I could have dealt with it had it remained a nightmare, but I started having the dream during meetings, while I was presenting. The fast pace of modern data was too much. I had spent the previous year downgrading my brain's operating system to a much older version, and jumping back into the deep end was like filling a teacup with a fire hose. When there was no room left in my head for any more ones and zeros, I short-circuited. The dreams became full-blown panic attacks, complete with sweaty palms and heart palpitations. I was starting to look like the guy in the after picture again. When I resigned, I tried my best to explain what had happened that day in the clouds. A good friend and colleague did his best to understand and remarked, "The trail really changed you." Actually, it was all those years on the corporate ladder that changed me. The trail simply put me back where I needed to be. One of the most commonly asked questions was, "How did the trail change you?" It was so common that people started asking before we were done, even as early as Georgia. Unless you already were one at the start, a hike of that duration makes you feel like a rock star, as though you can do anything. In retrospect, what we did was ridiculous, and few of us could even truly say why we tried. For some reason, strangers were impressed. Day hikers had begun congratulating us weeks before the finish line. The collective adrenaline from the final 100 miles and the epic scale of the ultimate climb elevated everyone's self-confidence to all-time highs, trivializing formerly daunting goals, presumably for life. Along the way, we learned that everything is actually possible. All you have to do is decide. Be passionate about something. Choose a path and go. Take a step and then another. Keep chipping away until that thing, no matter how ridiculously impossible it seemed at first, really is a memory that you can look back on, and then you can skip the hard parts if you like. All you have to do is take the first step. I'm sorry that the last part of my epic journey contained so much poop. But when you're telling a true story, you don't always get to decide how it ends, only how you react to it. And to be honest, I don't think this is the end at all. This hike was just one step in a much bigger plan to achieve more life goals. There's still much to do. There are so many trails and mountains out there. And when I tackle those mountains, standing at the base, feeling tiny and insignificant, I stomp my foot and whinny. I clear my lungs of bad air and remind myself to be grateful for the chance to take on the challenge at all. Because, as the Colonel reminds me in my dreams, I really am just getting started. Acknowledgements. This book is already a clown car as it is. There's no way I could fit any more characters into it. I was only able to include a small fraction of the hundreds of amazing and inspirational people I met along the way, on and off the trail. If I were to include everyone and tell each person's story with the detail they truly deserve, you would be reading a 5-volume epic with 1,000 pages per book. First and foremost, none of this would be possible without Katie Farrar. She is my trail boss, my favorite hiking partner, and the one person I'm happiest to see when I finally stumble into the glow of the fire. Thank you, Mark Calcaney, not only for the incredible cover art and illustrations, but also for inspiring Katie and me to push ourselves and to keep exploring. I am especially grateful to have Mark Hauser, not only as an editor, but as a friend. We've been going on long walks and telling stories since we were kids. Here's hoping the tradition lasts. And finally, I am also very thankful for Skip Huber, for Happy Camper Radio and the studios which he allowed me to use to record the audio version of this book. This project was made possible in part with help from Kickstarter. A big thank you to those supporters, Priscilla Farrar, Gary and Becky Farrar, Joe and Kirsten Melchionda, Sam and Lisa Hutchison, Travis Michaels and Angelica Beck, Ed Brialt, Rusty Manley, Tom Corzine, Doreen Hoover, Mark Hauser, Dave and Marcy Nisbeth, Daniel Rubin, Kevin Beatty, Adam and Mary George, Dale Penn and Brian Hunt, and Chris Davis. This has been Where's the Next Shelter? By Gary Sizer. Read by Gary Sizer. Copyright 2015.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.